This Week in Linux, Cosmic Alpha 7 has been released. We also have some new releases for some distributions. We have Open Mandriva, also Crux, and even something for the retro computer enthusiasts out there. We also have, I'm thinking maybe you could refer to me as the bringer of doom going forward. Games, the Doom games. There's a Humble Bundle. We'll talk about that later. Actually, we're going to talk about all of this and so much more on This Week in Linux, the weekly news show that keeps you up to date with what's going on in the Linux and open source world. Now let's jump right into your source for Linux good news. This episode of Twill is sponsored by Sandfly Security. More on them later. Cosmic Alpha 7 just landed and System 76 is making serious progress towards its first stable release. But before we dive into everything that's new with this alpha release of the highly anticipated Rust-powered desktop, if you didn't know, I have a podcast called Destination Linux. And I'm not just promoting the thing. There's a reason for that. And it is because the latest episode of this podcast, we interviewed the CEO and founder of System 76, Carl Ritchell. We talked about Cosmic, Pop! OS, the history of System 76 itself, and the journey that he went on with Linux and open source. If you are even remotely interested in the Cosmic desktop, then you absolutely should go check out that interview with Carl. We have a video version on YouTube. Or if you prefer an audio-only version, that's going to be available in any of your favorite podcast apps. So go check out Destination Linux 4.16, link in the show notes. All right, so let's talk about what's new with the Alpha 7 release of Cosmic. I like to cover every single one of these, but I haven't been making a video, so I might be doing that in the future. Feel free to subscribe if you haven't yet. So Cosmic Alpha 7 supports dragging and dropping of the workspaces. So let's give more context of what that means. So if you want to reorder your workspaces, you can do that with the drag and drop, which is really cool. But you can also do more than that because you can move workspaces between monitors. If you want to put one monitor or one workspace on one monitor and you decide, oh, well, I actually want to be on the other one, you can just drag and drop it that way. Now, that's important because in some desktops, that's not even possible. They're not independent. With Cosmic, the workspaces are independent per monitor, which means you could have three workspaces on one monitor, two workspaces on another monitor, 12 workspaces on another one. If for some reason you need to do that, you can. It's pretty cool. You have the independent options. But also, if you decide to not, you know, you made it before the Alpha 7. If you made it in Alpha 6, you wouldn't be able to move them around, but now you can, which is really cool. Also, they have the ability to pin workspaces. So in addition to the independent workspaces per monitor, they also have dynamic workspaces, which for anybody who's using GNOME would be familiar with that. So what it is that by default, you have a workspace. Once you open a window on that workspace, it will make another workspace that is available to you inside of the overview, and you can be able to move stuff to that one. Once you do that, it makes another one, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And if you close all the windows and applications on a particular workspace, it will just get rid of that workspace entirely. That's what the dynamic workspace means. But in this case, let's say you wanted to have a minimal amount of workspaces on a particular monitor. With Cosmic, you can pin the workspaces, creating that minimal system, and then still have the dynamic workspaces after the fact. So that's pretty cool. So this adds even more flexibility and control for power users who like to juggle multiple workflows. Now let's talk about accessibility, because this is very important and it continues to be a major focus for Cosmic, which is awesome. So they have a lot of different new modes that they've added. They have high contrast mode that was added. So you have auto calculations for better visibility. Color filters have been added, four of these, in fact. Deuteranopia, protanopia, and grayscale. Man, that last one was so easy to say. There's also color inversion mode that has been added where it helps users distinguish similar tones. And they also have mono sound, which merges stereo channels into one mono channel, making it easier for hearing impaired users. They've also made some improvements to the zoom tools. So one of the things that they did was making it easier to disable the magnifier overlay if you want to at some point, but also they made it possible to use the super scroll, scroll wheel on your mouse, and holding the super key, which is also known as the Windows key or the logo key or the mod 4 key, but I like super key, so that's what I'm going to call it. super key, plus a scroll wheel to be able to zoom in and zoom out, which is nice. They've also done some shortcut changes there, but we'll get to that in a second. But these refinements for accessibility is just fantastic for people who have impairments, whether it's visually or audibly. I love the fact that they're putting this much effort into accessibility on Cosmic. Now let's talk about shortcuts, because they are more intuitive now than they were before. You can now zoom the UI using super plus or super minus. I don't necessarily like that part, but we'll get to that in a second. They've also made it possible to do a cycle through workspaces in any particular order with shortcuts. And also new shortcuts have been added to move focus of windows between displays, which is very nice. So these changes reduce confusion and make navigation across multiple monitors feels much more seamless. But I will say that I would prefer it not to be super plus and instead be super equal to zoom in, and then super minus to zoom out, because super plus requires you to also have shift active. So I would prefer the equals, because most of the time, well, not all keyboards are laid out that way, but most keyboards are. So you'd have the equals without shift. And then if you wanted to do plus, you need to do shift as well. So that just seems a little awkward. So hopefully that's not how it is, but the way it's worded suggests that it is. So hopefully they make it, if that is how it is, that they make a change to that. Now let's talk about global shortcuts, because speaking of shortcuts, Cosmic has added support for global shortcuts with Wayland. So the global shortcuts now work with X11 apps and can be configured to respond to modifiers on or all key presses. This enables background apps to use hotkeys for tasks like push to talk and quick toggles. This is important because, for those who don't know, Cosmic by default is a Wayland-based desktop environment. It's made for Wayland. And this is important because Wayland has not had global shortcut functionality for very long, a couple of years or so, and it's very important to have it. So I'm really happy to see them adding into it, because now that Wayland has it, it's really good to see that all these desktop environments are adding it, because it doesn't seem like it's that big a deal, but it is for a lot of people, especially me, because I need to use shortcuts all the time for applications I'm not currently using when I'm making my content. So happy to see that. Now, speaking of apps for X11, there's now a better X11 app scaling with Cosmic, because it now includes two new fractional scaling modes for X Wayland apps. So you have optimized for applications and optimized for full screen / gaming. This helps legacy apps look sharper or scale better based on the use case, especially on high res displays like 4K and so on. There's also a subtle but helpful change for your file workflow. A seek ahead search option has been added to the file browser. Typing the first letter of a file or folder on a current page fills in the file path in the location bar and provides autocomplete options to speed up the process of file management, which is nice. Now let's talk about tooltips, because they're basically everywhere now. Hovering over items in the app tray, launcher, and workspaces now shows tooltips to help identify them. This boosts usability, especially for new users learning the interface. Now, audio also got some improvements here with a new left to right balance slider, which has been added to the sound settings to control which ear gets more emphasis. This is not necessarily an accessibility thing. That's why I didn't include it in the section for accessibility, but it is definitely a valuable aspect for people who have hearing differences between ears. So it's a cool, small detail, which also could be a big deal for some users. There's also a lot of under the hood tweaks that were happening. We're not going to go through everything because there's just so many, but I did want to say that there's been support for the EAP or the PEAP network authentication being added. So of course you have support for EAP and PEAP. Also, font fallback is available, and various UI polish, bug fixes, and performance improvements are included in this release of Cosmic Alpha 7. Yes, I just wanted to make that EAP and PEAP joke. So that's Cosmic Alpha 7, another big step toward the highly anticipated Epoch 1 release. It's not ready for frontline production just yet, but it's shaping up very fast. Let me know what you think about the new features and if you're planning to try it out. It's been 6 alphas since I took a look at the Cosmic desktop here on this channel, so I think it's a good time to revisit it for a walkthrough. If you're interested in more about Cosmic, then subscribe for that video. And also, remember, check out the podcast interview that we had with the founder of System76, Carl Richel, about Cosmic, PapaWest, and so much more. Check it out. Links in the show notes. The next generation of Open Mandriva has officially landed with Plasma 6, a new a brand new server edition, and also a few bold decisions. So let's jump in. OpenMandriva LX 6.0 is the latest release from the community-run distro and ships by default with the KDE Plasma 6.3 desktop environment, along with updated KDE gear with 2504, KDE frameworks with 6.13, and Qt 6.9, or Qt for the toolkit. Toolkit. This marks a major UI and feature leap over the previous LX 5.0 series, especially for those who are looking for the modern Plasma 6 experience. But Plasma isn't the only desktop available. You can also get one of the spins, which includes GNOME 48.1, LXQT 2.2, XFCE 4.20, and Cosmic 1.0 Alpha. Now that part is confusing because it does say Cosmic 1.0 Alpha in the release notes right here. And I don't know what they mean by that, because is it the latest alpha, or because there isn't a 1.0? And there is an alpha 1, but I don't know. I don't know what that means, but you know. Now let's talk about the server side. There's something entirely new here, because this is the first official stable release of OpenMandriva Server Edition. It's built differently from the desktop version in the fact that it has no GUI, so no graphical user interface. It ships as a disk image for easier deployment in virtualization and assumes the user knows what they're doing. So if you don't, this is maybe a way to learn, but out of the box, it's going to expect you to know. If you're planning on using a VirtualBox with a virtualized system of OpenMandriva 6.0, then there's a quick heads up here, is that if you're running the inside of VirtualBox, they strongly recommend that you use the X11 version, since there are some known problems with Wayland on VirtualBox emulated GPU, as they say. So this just helps avoid compatibility issues for those testing the distro in a virtual machine. Now let's talk about what's under the hood. So OMLX, or OpenMandriva LX 6.0, ships with Linux kernel 6.14.2 and 6.15.0 RC2 for those who are adventurous. It's built with CLang or Clang, GCC 14.2.1, Clang 19.1.7, Systemd 257.5, LibreOffice 25.2.3, Chromium 135, and they've also have a JPEG XL enabled, and they have Mesa 25.0.4 and Firefox 137.0.2. It's one of the few distros using LLVM and Clang as a default compiler stack. So that's a notable technical distinction for OpenMandriva. It's not the only one, but it is one of the few. So if you're interested in learning more about that, you can check out OpenMandriva for that. But let's talk about the bold decisions that I mentioned earlier. So they have some changes and some perks related to the gaming. So you include Proton and Proton Experimental outside of Steam, which is pretty cool to see. And another thing that they claim is that they have disabled Google spyware in Chromium and also spyware in Firefox. Now, I'm glad to see that they have a focus on privacy. It's very important. And improving gaming support is always good. But there's often an overuse or misuse of the term spyware, because it sounds scarier than data collection or telemetry. But spyware has a distinct meaning, and that meaning is that you don't know it's there. If whatever project, whatever distro, whatever is collecting data and asks you to do it, or gives you the ability to know that it's doing it, it's not spyware, because the entire concept of spyware requires you to not know. So Firefox does tell you when you install it and you load it for the first time, it asks you, do you want to participate? And there's like a page that loads up to tell you about what's all happening in Firefox and what's new in Firefox and all that sort of stuff. So if they tell you, it's not spyware. That applies to more so to just Firefox. It's everything, just so you know. Now let's go back to the server again, because the release of OpenMandriva LX 6.0 has some stuff for tinkerers. The server edition includes a pre-configured user, minimal pre-installed packages, and support for architectures including x86-64, ARM64, and AMD Zen hardware. This makes it a flexible base for people who want to create custom server environments and deployment in cloud or virtualization setups. That's OpenMandriva LX 6.0, and this release is not just a run-of-the-mill update, but a pretty substantial release with a lot of changes. If you decide to give it a spin, let me know what you think in the comments. After nearly 3 years, Crux is back with version 3.8, and it's bringing major updates for minimalists and power users alike. Before we get started with what's new in 3.8, first let's talk about what Crux is, because, well, the crux of the matter is that it's been a while since I last talked about Crux, so you might not know what it is. So it's been like a little over 3 years or so. So let's first address what Crux is. So Crux is a lightweight Linux distribution for x86 64 architecture targeted at experienced Linux users. The primary focus of this distribution is to keep it simple, as they say, which is debatable about the simple word, but which is reflected in a straightforward tar.gz-based package system, BSD-style init scripts, and a relatively small collection of trimmed packages. The secondary focus is a utilization of new Linux features and recent tools and libraries. Crux also has a port system, which makes it easy to install and upgrade applications. Easy is a relative term here. So who is Crux suited for? Well, a somewhat experienced Linux user who wants a clean and solid Linux distribution as the foundation of their installation. This is what they're saying on their frequently asked questions, by the way. And they also say a person who prefers editing configuration files with an editor to using a GUI, and someone who does not hesitate to download and compile programs from the source. So if that sounds like you, then you might be interested in Crux. If it doesn't sound like you, then you could just use something else. But here, quick trivia I wanted to give you is that Crux is the distro project that kind of inspired the creation of Arch Linux. So, you know, the term the father of something, like someone's the father of something, it is used to describe the people or whoever is like the creator of something. So I guess you could say that Crux is the grandpappy of Arch. I don't know, but I wanted to call it that. All right, let's talk about what's new in Crux 3.8. So under the hood, let's start with what's powering this whole thing, and that Crux 3.8 comes with multi-lib toolchain featuring glibc 240, gcc 14.2, and binutils 2.43.1, plus Linux kernel 6.12.23 LTS. These are major under-the-hood updates for the previous version. It boosts performance, compatibility, and long-term support. On the graphics side of things, Crux remains flexible. Crux 3.8 ships with Xorg 7.7 and Xorg Server 21.1.16, but it also includes Wayland with Wayland 1.23.1, and it defaults to Xorg, but users can easily enable Wayland if they want to, as well as run xWayland if they want to for various X apps. So this is good for people who want to have a super customized thing, which makes sense for people who would be using Crux. Also, some important libraries have been updated to major versions which are not ABI compatible with older versions, so manual upgrades via ports are strongly discouraged. The changes may temporarily break your system, so it's better to use the full ISO than just basic updates. So if you're installing fresh, here's what to expect. Crux 3.8 ISO uses ISO hybrid, supports both DVD and USB boot, and offers UEFI installation support. So it improves install flexibility and hardware compatibility for both legacy and modern systems. On the package side of things, some notable shifts include Python 2 has been completely removed. A glib introspection has been split into a new port to avoid circular dependency, and several packages have been renamed. And also, there's a new way to stay current and up to date. A new repository tries to generate rootfs and container images automatically on schedule starting with 3.8. This adds convenience for container users and streamlined deployments for server or development use cases. So Crux 3.8 isn't just a refresh. It's a big shift for those who are looking for a very minimalist distro with major toolchain updates, Wayland support, and new automation for containers. This release proves that even in a world of lean, minimalist distros, there's room for big changes. As Linux users, we know what's up. Security is non-negotiable. But with threats getting smarter, your security tools need to keep pace without dragging your system down. Traditional agents, they slow you down, and they leave blind spots. It's time for a smarter approach, and that is why This Week in Linux is proud to be sponsored by Sandfly Security, the revolutionary agentless platform designed for Linux. Sandfly doesn't just detect and respond. It revolutionizes security with SSH key tracking, password auditing, and drift detection, covering threats from every angle. Whether your systems are in the cloud, on-premises, or in embedded devices, Sandfly ensures they're all secure without the headaches of agent-based solutions. Listen to what Ken Kleiner, the senior security engineer at the University of Massachusetts, has to say. He says that Sandfly is the first product that he's seen that accurately and quickly detects thousands of signs of compromise on the Linux platform. Its unique method automates tasks which would be manually impossible. Automation is key with detection, and Sandfly completely fits this and other requirements. If your organization is using Linux, this should be part of your cybersecurity toolset. So experience security that's not just effective, but gives you peace of mind. No agents, no downtime, just cutting edge protection. Dive into the future of Linux security at thisweekinlinux.com/sandfly. That's thisweekinlinux.com/SANDFLY. And see how Sandfly can transform your security strategy. And if you're as fascinated by cybersecurity as much as I am, then go check out the interview we just had on Destination Linux with the CEO of Sandfly, who has an awesome story about how he got into Linux and security. It's great. Go check it out. DestinationLinux.net/409 for that interview. And of course, thisweekinlinux.com/sandfly for more information about the awesome service that Sandfly Security offers. Commodore OS Vision 3.0 is here, and it might just be the ultimate retro-futuristic Linux distro ever. It's a very specific claim, which I'm pretty confident it could be that. So what is it? Let's start with what this distro even is, because Commodore OS Vision 3.0 is a free, fan-made Linux distro based on Debian Bookworm designed for Commodore-branded hardware like the Commodore 64X. It blends nostalgia with modern functionality, giving fans a retro experience built on current tech. So like I said, it's based on Debian and it uses the Mate desktop. So it's made for x86 64 architectures. And a couple of weeks ago, I covered an update to Amiga OS. Yes, that the original like Amiga OS. And a few days ago, I was talking to a friend on Discord and I mentioned there was a new release Amiga OS. And he asked if I was talking about Commodore OS Vision. And I thought, what? What's that? And then lo and behold, we get a brand new version of Commodore OS Vision to talk about here on the show within like a week or so. So that was pretty good. Pretty good timing. So let's talk about more about what this is. One of the biggest selling points is right in the name. Commodore OS Vision 3.0 is a large games-oriented Linux distribution featuring 200-plus free Linux-compatible games neatly categorized by genre as well as an assortment of classic Commodore games and demos. So this makes it one of the most games-packed Linux distributions ever, perfect for existing retro gamers or people who are wanting to get into retro gaming. So it's not just for playing games. You can also use it to make games for this kind of platform. Commodore OS includes its own basic interpreter, Commodore OS Basic V1, which features 3D graphics, sprites, physics, tile maps, and more. It provides a complete development suite for retro-inspired games, even targeting original C64 and Amiga hardware down the line. The distro also ships with multiple basic environments like Gambas, Basic 256, SDL Basic, Fuse Basic, and CBM PRG Studio for original C64 Basic. This wide support helps everyone from beginners to veteran programmers get involved in retro development if they want. But what if you're not into BASIC? Well, you still got some options because Commodore OS 3.0 also includes Godot, Unity, Scratch, and even support for Tilt 5 augmented reality game development. So whether you're making 2D pixel art or AR games, the tools are available for you. Commodore OS Vision 3.0 now features a new retro-inspired settings manager for configuring ROMs, startup options, and much more. It's designed to evoke like a nostalgia while making the system more user-friendly and configurable, which is pretty cool. There's also a new hub for users. So Commodore OS Central is a new resource and community platform in development for game installs, community interaction, and retro documentation. So this could help build a dedicated user base and simplify getting started with the whole OS. And finally, their extras are here and they're anything but minor because the distro includes gigabytes of public domain Commodore games, demos, animations, and also mod/SID music. That's a massive library of content ready to enjoy out of the box and legally because it's the public domain. So that's pretty good. Whether you're here for the nostalgia, the gaming, or the dev tools, Commodore OS Vision 3.0 is packed, polished, and proudly retro. and I'm planning to check it out. What about you? QEMU 10.0 is here, and it's packed with faster CPU emulation, expanded hardware support, and improved virtualization. First up, let's look at one of the biggest performance gains in this release, and that is faster emulation of string instructions. So this directly improves performance for x86 workloads and makes a big difference in scenarios like OS boot and large memory operations. There's also some great news for virtualization at scale. The VertIO SCSI, or VertIO-SCSI device now supports true multi-queue, allowing different queues to be handled by separate I/O threads. This can significantly improve I/O scalability in virtual machine environments, especially when high throughput is needed. RISC-V gets a major boost. So QEMU 10.0 introduces support for multiple RISC-V ISA instructions, including SHA and SMRNMI, SMDBLTRP, SSPM, SUPM, along with CPUs like TensTorrent, Ascalon, and Zhangshan Nanyu. So that's a lot to say. I'm pretty sure I butchered every single one of those. Anyway, it strengthens QEMU's position as the go-to emulator for developers in the rapidly growing RISC-V ecosystem. The Apple ecosystem hasn't been left out either. QEMU 10.0 adds Apple GFX PCI and Apple GFX MMIO, devices that now uses macOS's para-virtualized graphics framework to provide accelerated graphics to macOS guests. These enable a better performance and smoother rendering for macOS virtualization on Apple hardware. Support for Long Arc continues to improve. QEMU 10.0 adds KVM support for CPU hot plug, para-virtualized IPI, KVM steal time, and virtual EXTIOI features. This improves virtualization on Chinese-developed hardware architectures, expanding QEMU's global relevance. And also, we have some improvements for the S390X users. They get more power too, because QEMU now includes a CPU model for the Generation 17 mainframe CPU and support for VertIO MIM and bypassing IOMMU for PCI devices, so GPU pass-through. These additions boost performance and memory flexibility on IBM mainframes. They've also done some improvements for their documentation and the usability because they received a pretty big facelift. QEMU's QMP documentation has been overhauled with clickable references, sorted indices or indexes, and also better cross-referencing. Developers and systems benefit by this by having easier navigation and quicker debugging. And I already mentioned the GPU pass-through, but there's even more because they got a serious improvement for the latest release with VFIO now supports old ATI X550 GPUs and improves IGD pass-through for Intel Gen 11 and 12. It increases compatibility for setups using GPU pass-through, especially in gaming and CAD workloads. There's also some progress on Rust because Rust-based device model support is still experimental, but it is maturing. Most new development can now be done safely using Rust. And also Rust support paves the way for safer, more maintainable code in QEMU's future. Whether you're building VMs, testing CPUs, or emulating cutting-edge hardware, QEMU 10.0 makes it more capable, faster, and just more flexible than ever. If you're using NVIDIA drivers on Linux, it's time to check for updates because a critical security flaw has been found and patches have been rolled out. So you should have the update, but if you haven't got it, just make sure you go and check to see if you do. So let's start with the major security vulnerability at the center of this update. So NVIDIA GPU display driver for Linux contains a vulnerability which could allow an unprivileged attacker to escalate permissions. A successful exploit of this vulnerability might lead to code execution, denial of service, escalation of privileges, information disclosure, and data tampering. So, could be a problem. This is a high severity issue rated 7.8 out of 10, which means it could put your system at serious risk if left unpatched. So, patch it. So, go update. I'll wait. Oh, that was quick. You updated really quick. And let's talk about the versions you need to be safe. So they fixed Linux driver versions of 535.247.01, 550.163.01, 570.133.07, and 575.51.02. The actual details will be in the description in the show notes. You can check that out. If your driver is older than any of these, you'll need to update to secure your system against the CVE 2025-23244. Lots of numbers. It's not just regular GPU drivers. vGPU setups are also impacted. So NVIDIA vGPU software also had two additional vulnerabilities. That's basically 23245 and 23246 that could allow a guest to either access global resources or consume uncontrolled resources, both leading to denial of service. This is especially important for enterprise or cloud environments running virtualized GPUs where downtime or resource exhaustion can be very costly. You might be wondering what products are affected. Well, the affected products include GeForce, NVIDIA RTX, Quadro, NFS, Tesla, vGPU software, and cloud gaming setups under Linux and select virtualization platforms. So a lot of stuff. So it's just important. Go update. I'll wait again. If you haven't already. I mean, this wide reach means many professional and consumer grade setups could be at risk without proper updates. So again, do that. Also, NVIDIA says that risk assessment is based on average of risk across a diverse set of installed systems and may not represent true risks to your local installation. So it's important to know you may not be as critically affected, but you probably should just update anyway because the patches are available and you might as well. GamingOnLinux.com have reported that Discord is making some pretty big moves. There's a new CEO, there's plans for going public, and also questions about what's next for the platform. So let's dive in. First up, Discord announces a big leadership change. They say that, and I quote, "We have hired a new CEO to lead Discord through our next chapter of growth and someday becoming a public company." They say that they are thrilled to have this new person on taking on this role, and they will continue to be part of the board of directors and advisor to the CEO, and that is the current or the previous CEO, Jason Citron. I think that's how you say it. Not sure about that. So Discord's leadership transition marks a pivotal moment that could reshape the platform's future as it moves toward a public offering, which is very interesting because a lot of people are wondering if they were going to go public. And now we kind of know that they are planning to go public. And the way they're going to do it is to replace the CEO. So let's talk about the experience the new CEO brings to the table. So the new CEO is Humam Saknini, I probably said that wrong, sorry if I did, who previously served as the vice chairman at Activision Blizzard, managing major franchises like Call of Duty, World of Warcraft, and Candy Crush, and also led King Digital Entertainment to record growth. Also, his background could be crucial in scaling Discord while navigating its expansion to new business lines like advertising and microtransactions, which everybody wants to have more ads and more microtransactions. So that's so good. What does Discord's future look like under this new leadership, you might be asking? Well, they say that, and I quote, "I'm incredibly excited to join Discord at such a pivotal moment. Discord stands as a massive foundational part of the gaming ecosystem that millions of players, developers, and publishers rely on every day. What Jason and Discord co-founder and CTO Stan Vyshnevsky have built is truly remarkable. A platform with an undeniable product market fit where hundreds of millions of people connect around their passion for gaming and shared interests." End quote. But not everything is sunshine and rainbows, according to some users. Discord is reportedly pushing more advertising and paid customizations as part of its effort to become a public company, raising concerns amongst the user base. Some of them being annoyed by the fact that Discord Nitro does not stop you from getting these ads. And I can confirm that I do have Nitro to boost the Discord server for the Tux Digital channel. So if you want to go into that Discord server, why it still makes sense, go to tuxedo.com/Discord and you can join the community there. But yeah, many worry that Discord could follow the path of other platforms where going public led to a decline in user experience. And they've already kind of started that a little bit with the microtransaction stuff and also with the ads everywhere. because I understand ads. You know, I get it. There's ads on my show. There's ads on YouTube in general. So I'm not saying that ads are terrible or anything like that. But if you're going to pay for like Nitro, like the Pro Edition, but to also get ads, that's just very sketch. I recommend the new CEO change that so that the people who have pro premium accounts are not getting ads too, because that's just excessive. So Discord's next chapter is officially underway, but whether it strengthens its community or alienates the users remains to be unseen. Either way, big changes are coming. So if you're on board for Discord, maybe that might change in the future. We do use Discord for this channel and for the network. So I'm a little torn. I'm hesitant because usually a new CEO is not the best thing to hear. Now, it can be because sometimes the person who is the founder is not the best person to be a CEO of a company. That's been proven many times. So it's not necessarily a bad thing that the CEO decided to step down and have someone else take a position. But, you know, microtransactions and ads are already happening. So whoever's making that decision isn't doing good. Ads are fine. Even I hesitate to say microtransactions are fine. They could be, depending if they're respecting the user. It has been proven to be possible by some mobile games, but at the same time, it's also proven to easily be destroying the value of the game. Hopefully it doesn't destroy the value of Discord moving forward. In the intro, I said you could call me the bringer of doom games because I'm telling you about a bundle that you can get from Humble Bundle, which is the id and Friends bundle, which comes with a lot of Doom games. We have Wolfenstein 2 also, the new Colossus, but Doom, we have Doom 2016, Doom, Doom 2. You also get Doom 3, but it's not fully supported exactly. So it's got gold rating, not platinum rating. The rest of them have platinum. But also Doom 64 also has gold rating. And you also get access to Doom Eternal, including the Doom Eternal Year 1 Pass. And you also get 10% off of coupons for Doom the Dark Ages and Doom the Dark Ages Premium Edition. And you also get some more Wolfenstein stuff. We get Wolfenstein, The New Order, and The Old Blood. So if you appreciate me bringing you Doom and all the other games, then check out the Humble Bundle store with the link in the description / show notes, because that will be an affiliate link, which will help the show and the channel. And if you do want to get one of these, I would appreciate it very much to use that affiliate link because, you know, it costs you nothing and benefits me some. So I'd appreciate that. Link in the show notes. Thanks for watching this episode of This Week in Linux. If you like what I do here on this show and want to be kept up to date with what's going on in the Linux and open source world, then be sure to subscribe. And of course, remember to like that smash button. If you'd like to support the show and the Tux Digital Network, then consider becoming a patron by going to tuxdigital.com/membership, where you get a bunch of cool perks like access to the patron-only sections of our Discord server and access to the patron-only post show that happens every week after the show is done streaming. So go check it out, tuxdigital.com/membership, to get all those perks. And also, if you want to support the show, you can order the Linux is Everywhere t-shirt or the This Week in Linux shirt at tuxdigital.com/store. Plus, while you're there, check out all the other cool stuff we have, like hats, mugs, hoodies, and so much more, tuxdigital.com/store. I'll see you next time for another episode of your source for Linux good news. Thanks again for watching. I'm Michael Tunnell. I hope you're doing swell. Be sure to ring that notification bell. And until next time, I bid you farewell.